Hello and welcome everyone to this week's episode of Pocket Theology. This week we're going to be talking about who the church really belongs to and other related subjects. Basically what this is going to be is Martin has a rant, a theologically relevant rant, and we're just going to talk through it, bring up Bible verses as they come up, and kind of discuss as pastors, as theologians, as followers of Jesus, as best we can in light of Scripture, what can we say about ownership in the church, who the church belongs to, who should be calling the shots, those sorts of things. So hopefully this episode is helpful. Thanks for being here with us, and let's get started. Martin, say hello to everyone, please.
Well, how do you do, Mr. Kangaroo?
Is that better or worse than my Groot one last week? I feel like it's worse.
This is definitely better.
Mine was like more culturally relevant, I feel.
I don't feel that way. Because what I've done is I took the style of greeting from Ted Lasso. So mine is more culturally relevant.
Oh, because Ted Lasso is more recent. I don't watch Ted Lasso, so.
That's because you're lame.
Anyways, Martin, I don't really know how to intro this besides just to throw it to you and say you had some thoughts, as most pastors do, about the way that people behave in the church, how they feel, or how certain individuals may feel like when they have authority or should have authority or should have voice in the church. The behavior that you'll see from time to time in almost every congregation will be some members that feel like this is my church. It belongs to me. I get to call the shots. You better not mess with me, that kind of thing. A lot of times in these sorts of situations, people will say to us, well, that's just how this person is, or that's how it's always been here. You just need to put up with it. What do you want to say to that?
And the problem is, you don't. So, here's why. Because throughout the New Testament, Jesus and Paul describe, and other authors of epistles, they all describe a way that we're supposed to live. They all describe what spiritual maturity looks like. And the problem is that most of us pretend that because we've been sitting in church for 30 years, for 50 years, for 70 years, that means that we're mature. And that does not mean anything except you have an attention span. Congratulations. Paul describes a mature Christian in Galatians chapter 5 by talking about the fruit of the Spirit. And the way that this gets ignored is upsetting, because we will put people into leadership without checking. Are they more loving? Are they more kind? Are they patient? Are they good people? We don't look at a lot of these things. My dad is at a church in Missouri right now that's having a problem with an elder who has no patience and no tolerance. And that's a problem. Because the church is also set up that the only way that you can remove an elder from leadership is if they miss 4 weeks of church straight.
That's the only thing in their bylaws.
That's the only thing in their bylaws.
There's some serious oversights there, but anyway, continue.
Yeah, because they expected to not have to deal with the problem with elders. But We've put people in leadership in places that should not be there because they do not show signs of following Jesus. But they've been in the church for a while. So what we end up doing is we create a consumerist culture in our leadership, which leads into the rest of our congregation. We've created a culture where because you've consumed so much content, you're allowed to do stuff now. Because you've listened to sermons for 30 years, you're allowed to be a teacher. Even though the things that you teach may not be reflected in your life and you have no desire of changing that, you still can teach it. That's part of the problem. A big part of the problem is we've neglected spiritual maturity in favor of spiritual consumption.
Yeah. This reminds me of, it reminds me of Matthew 7. So Matthew 7, 15 through 17. Beware of false prophets. They come to you in sheep's clothing, but inwardly they are ravenous wolves. By their fruit you will recognize them. Are grapes gathered from thorn bushes or figs from thistles? Likewise, every good tree bears good fruit, but a bad tree bears bad fruit. And it's the same thing with these teachers. I mean, if somebody sits in the church for 40 years, that doesn't say anything about their relationship with Jesus, about their submission to God, about their priority in the kingdom of heaven. All that it means is they sat in church. So if they are spiritual thistles and thorn bushes, they shouldn't be put in positions of leadership. They should be confronted and challenged and discipled. But instead, we have this idea, and you called it consumerism. I would call it like a country club mentality. Like, you've been here a long time, so you get a voice, which is just a bad way to run a church. I mean, hopefully everyone listening to this can think of individuals that maybe has only been their church or in a church they served in previously for a year or two, but they have very valid opinions. And I don't think someone who's only been in church for a year should be like an elder or something, because there is an element of like time served and emotional maturity over time. But individuals whose opinion you would trust, who are very biblically shaped, you know, shaped by the scriptures. And maybe they've only been a Christian for a year or two. Maybe they were when they were younger and they came back. Maybe they've only been a part of your congregation for a short period of time, whatever the situation is. But on the other hand, there are people who've been there for 40 or 50 years that sit in the pew and no one knows anything about them. And, you know, the husband still has an anger issue and the wife is super gossipy. And that's all that we know, because they just don't interact with people. They have no community. They haven't been spiritually formed at all. I would rather the newbie be in a position of leadership, because at least they're showing fruit. So it's not you will know them by how long they've sat in a pew. It's you will know them by their fruit.
Exactly. We are in the process of creating programs in our church that require me to do a little bit more looking. So I've been watching videos from a couple of different people. One of those is Micah Oder, who works with the Russell School of Ministry and the Christian Church Leadership Foundation.
Yeah, it's one of those like under the umbrella of Central Christian College of the Bible.
Yes.
But yeah, he used to be a discipleship minister at Whitewater Christian Church, maybe?
Something. Something with water.
Something with water.
But
Water Christian Church, that's it.
One of the videos that I was watching, he talks about how spiritual growth works, and he uses a square method. There's four squares, and with each step or each square, you grow a little bit. But one of the things that he explained through this was one of the big things that we have a problem with as a culture is measuring growth. So he explained that most Americans would measure growth by saying that they learned something new. They don't have to do anything about it, but they can learn something new and say that they've grown. So they go to church and they're excited because the pastor said this new thing that they've never heard, and they go, I'm growing. They think that they're growing because they're learning more. The problem is when that pastor starts recycling sermons, or they're reusing the same stories or ideas in different passages, you start to get people who say this phrase, and I'm sure Jason loves this phrase, I'm just not being fed here.
Mm-hmm.
So they expect that it's your job to feed them, and they need to know new things. But when the new things run out, they say, I'm not being fed, and I'm going to go somewhere else. Now, I've had those people. I've met those people. I know those people. I'm related to some of those people. But that's not how we measure growth. We measure growth by fruits. And so in that same sentence, basically, Micah says, we shouldn't be measuring how we grow by what we learn, but by what we're doing differently.
Mm-hmm.
So we can say, oh, I've learned something new. That's awesome. But what are you doing about it? How has it changed the way that you're living day to day? How has it changed the way that you think about your neighbors? How has it changed the way that you treat the people down the street? How has it changed the way that you interact with the Walmart cashier who can't give you the 10 cents off of your loaf of bread that you wanted to get?
What a wildly specific example.
I don't want to talk about that example, but
the person that I always point to in situations like this, because yeah, I mean, so knowledge acquisition is a good thing, right? Beginning it of is. Wisdom is fear of the Lord. I think that any attempt to acquire new knowledge about God that you personally did not possess before is good. And that is a part of spiritual formation. But the issue, as you were alluding to, as Micah alluded to, I guess, is when that becomes the end all be all, that you acquire knowledge and you're like, okay, I'm a better Christian because I know more about God. And that's never the picture of faith that we're given. The picture of faith throughout the New Testament, especially, but even in the Old Testament as well, is someone who is committed to the cause of Christ. I think there's two issues with the I'm not being fed people. Part of it is just that they lose the second half. They're like, yeah, I'm going to learn about God, but I'm not going to actually do anything with it, right? The other half is the idea, and I think this is where you're going, because I've heard Micah give a similar presentation before while I was doing my first master's degree. If your issue is that your pastor isn't feeding you, okay, why have you not learned to cook for yourself? You know, like, you should be able to open your scriptures and feed yourself. You know, if you learned about someone who is a friend of yours that was 30 years old, still living with their mother and expected their parents to cook every meal for them, then you'd be like, wow, what an immature person. Many of us do that spiritually. We are spiritually still living in our mother's basement and incapable of feeding ourselves, which is just sad.
And I'm going to point this to a very specific problem that has been going on for decades to centuries. Is we say the pastor is in charge, the pastor is doing everything. The pastor is in charge of the ministries. The pastor is in charge of preaching. The pastor is in charge of making sure that I'm living right. The pastor is in charge of discipleship. The pastor is in charge of anything that goes on at the church.
If my kids leave the faith, it's because the pastor or the youth pastor didn't give them enough attention. There's no way that it's my fault as a parent.
Exactly.
Or that it's just happenstance and they're a human being with free will that will make their own decisions as they get older. It can't be that. It's the pastor's fault.
Exactly. And so this is a, oh my gosh, Tom Rainer calls it a cultural problem. It's not a physical problem. It's a cultural problem. It's not something that can be fixed in a day. It's something that's going to take years of retraining for us as a culture of Christians. So that's the first soapbox I had to get on. I'm going to get on a taller one here in a second. Yeah. Unless you want to add something.
I just want to, actually, I kind of want to add two things. One, I probably should have added earlier. Just an example of knowledge of God is not sufficient. One of the most knowledgeable people on subjects, especially concerning the New Testament, alive today, is Bart Ehrman. He's also not a Christian. There is no spiritual formation in his life. He's a self-proclaimed agnostic. He'll call himself an atheist sometimes, but from my understanding, his position is really an agnostic one. You can know tons about the Bible and have no love and no commitment to Jesus. And most of us wouldn't end up declaring ourselves atheists or agnostics, but you're functionally living like one. So you can know the Bible back and forth and have no spiritual formation. And he's just one example of it.
Here's where this problem funnels into, and this is what we were going to talk about today. The church doesn't belong to us as individuals. And this is something that I'm very firm on. I get very upset when people start talking about my church, especially as leaders. So when I talk about the church that I attend, I'll say we, or I'll say where we worship, or the people of God there. I'll talk about North Grand Christian Church, but I never describe it as my church, because if it's my church, there's a problem.
Okay. We're going to have like a little disagreement there, but it's terminology. But go ahead and do your bit.
So here's where the problem comes. A lot of us hate change, and that's a part of being a human. change is a nightmare unless you're the one fighting for it. If you've noticed the problem and you want to solve it, change is fine. But if you are not that person and you love how things are and you're focused about how you're being fed and you're focused on how you can grow and you're focused on how you can become closer to God, then it's a terrible thing when the focus shifts. So here's my example, okay? A church has a specific target audience most of the time, and it helps with communication, it helps with ministry strategies, it helps with advertising. Yeah. So our church's target audience is men between the ages of 24 and 40 who are who have bachelor's degrees or lower, who live in the surrounding communities or in Ames, and just, enjoy outdoor stuff.
And just to clarify for people, when we're saying like, oh, the church has a target audience, it's just trying to be realistic and strategic, trying to say, we know that we can't be everything that everyone needs. So there's going to be one church that's going to aim for people that are more educated, one that's going to aim for people that are less educated, one's going to be aimed more at men, one's going to be aimed more at women. Just because you're trying to serve as well as you can a specific population you're equipped to serve, it doesn't mean that North Grand's going to turn away someone with a PhD if they show up at the door and be like, you aren't one of our people. Like, exactly. That's not what we're saying.
We're not turning anybody away. The issue is who we're trying to reach. And
you're thinking of when you're planning, because you can't make programs so broad that they aim at everyone. So you just have to aim at someone and then say, we hope that we get more than the people we're aiming at.
Exactly. Here's where the problems started. This was our target audience about 7 years ago. We didn't change it. We said, we're going to continue with this group that we're going to try and reach. But now we're going to actually change things. So we hired a part-time worship minister who does contemporary Christian music instead of stuff from the early 2000s or hymns, right? We've started to target our ministries towards men instead of women, creating a hospitality area so that when people show up, they feel welcomed. We're looking at values that people in this group are going to appreciate. The problem is, that's not everybody, right? So the older generation, and there's specific people who have problems with it, of course, it's not everybody, but the older generation has caused problems. They've said, well, this isn't for me. I don't want this. You're doing it differently than what I'm used to, and I don't like it. The problem is, they used to be the target audience, and now they're not. They used to have a level of attention that they no longer have. I'm going to talk about Ted Lasso for a second, Jason.
Before you do, like, I want everyone to really see the situation going on here. If someone had something that they wanted, they had power, they had influence, they were being directly served in the ways that they wanted, they were getting the programs they wanted, the Bibles they wanted, the music they wanted, whatever, and now they feel like something's being taken away from them, and they're failing to see the reason why you're losing these privileges and rights you used to have is not because you're a bad person or we hate you, it's because we're trying to reach other people. They've lost the mission, so they just feel like they're being attacked for no good reason, and now they're going to lash out. And this happens in churches all the time. And normally, not always, but normally it's when a community says, hey, the people we've been serving are not the people we should be. We've been looking at insiders. We've been looking at the older generation that's shrinking. We should be looking younger. We should be looking at, you know, if it's a white church, but it's in a predominantly Black community, saying, hey, we need to express ourselves in ways that makes Black people more comfortable in our congregation. And then you'll see white people start going like, but I was comfortable here and now you're making me uncomfortable, and people start to lash out. So that's the situation that Martin's talking about. And it happens in churches all the time. And it happens with good people that have just lost the mission.
I also want to point out, it doesn't just happen in churches. It happens everywhere.
Yeah.
But I want to
school boards, clubs, whatever, companies, happens all the time.
So this is... this problem actually occurs in Ted Lasso. So here's what happens. Ted hires this young man who is essentially the team's janitor, basically. He does their laundry and keeps their clothes clean. He cleans up around the place. They call him a kit man. Eventually, Ted figures out, and if you don't know, Ted Lasso is about a American who goes over to London to coach a soccer team there. He knows nothing about soccer. It's hilarious. It's a wonderful TV show. I love it. I'm going to form my personality around it for the next decade. So, but what happens is he finds this guy who has an amazingly strategic mind. He asks him what his thoughts are. Ted's one of those guys who says a good idea can come from anywhere. So let's ask anyone. So he asks the janitor, essentially. The janitor's name is Nate. Nate comes up with this great idea. It works wonderfully, right? At the end of the first season, they make Nate an assistant coach. Awesome. He's been recognized for all of the hard work that he's done, and now he gets paid like the coach. He gets the respect of the coach. He gets the favor from Ted. He gets all of the benefits, right? And in the middle of season two, they hire another assistant coach who was a former player. And what happens is you can see Ted starts to focus more on the new guy, Roy. He starts to explain that Roy's doing great. Roy's awesome. Roy is helping to develop players. He's spending time with the guys he used to play. He knows what he's doing, right? He can form tactics. He used to play the game. And you can see throughout the second season, you can actually see it visually, because throughout the second season, Nate starts growing gray hairs. And by the end of the season, it's entirely gray. But as he becomes more and more discontent with the situation, you can continue to see it. Stuff shows up. He starts to lash out at players because Ted's not looking at him, right? He starts to cause problems. At the end of the season, he ends up in their final game, waiting in the coach's office for Ted. And Ted says, "Nate, what did I do wrong? What's the problem here?" He's done something terrible to Ted, and Ted says, "What did I do? What have I done?" And he says, "What you did is you looked at me like I was the most amazing, most brilliant person in the world. And then you just stopped, like you turned off a light." He became discontent with the situation because the focus was shifted. The strategy for developing coaches was no longer focused on him. And so he became discontent.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is happening all over the place. But the problem is, Nate sees the team as his team. He sees an ownership. He sees that he is the owner. His ideas are the only ones that matter. And this is what's important. Ownership is extremely important in your local church. If you don't take ownership, you're not going to be a part of any of the ministries. If you don't take ownership, then what's to keep you there? But you can't see yourself as the only owner, because there is a larger owner. In Matthew chapter 16, Jesus describes Peter as the rock that he will build his church on. His church, not my church. And when you see Paul talk about the same thing, he talks about the body of Christ with Christ at the head. It's not the Corinthians church. Mm-hmm. It's not Onesimus's church in Philemon. It's God's church. And so you do not get to make the decisions. God makes the decisions. You are carrying them out. That's where this rant is going. Because far too many of us think that it's my church, so I better get what I want. And it's no longer focused on who the church is trying to reach. It's no longer focused on reaching people for Jesus. It's focused on keeping me there.
Yeah. Hey guys, Jason here. Thanks so much for listening to the first half of my conversation with Martin about people who have inappropriate ownership or feel inappropriate ownership over their local congregations. We kind of laid out the problem already. Next week is going to be focusing on what you and I, regardless of our positions in the church, can do to mitigate the trouble that causes for a local congregation. Even if you don't have any titles, you're just someone who shows up on Sundays, who volunteers when you can, and who goes to small group when you're available, but you really love that church community, you can have, frankly, probably a bigger impact than a lot of staff members or even elders in your church can have in stopping these kinds of people from distracting your congregation from the mission that God has laid out before it. So please join in. It's going to be another shorter episode, so it won't take too much of your time. Maybe you can listen to it on your commute next Tuesday when it comes out. We are looking forward to having you back, and we will talk to you then. In the meantime, don't forget to give us 5 stars on Spotify or Apple Podcast or wherever you listen to us, and follow, subscribe, whatever that service calls it, wherever you're at, so you don't miss another episode.